The 55th International Whaling Commission meeting in Berlin, Germany, ended with member nations sharply divided over the management of the world's whale population. The International Whaling Commission, founded in 1946, with a dual mission to protect whale stocks and to promote the orderly development of the whaling industry, has struggled to meet these often contradictory goals. Those struggles continued in Berlin. Delegates from 51 countries and observers from more than 40 conservation groups attended the five-day meeting. The commission resolved to establish a conservation committee to address such issues as marine pollution, climate change, and accidental bycatch, the unintentional snaring of whales in commercial fishing nets. The pro-whaling nations, led by Japan, Norway, and Iceland, have threatened to withhold financial support from the initiative and called the plan an attempt to subvert the purpose of the organization. The same countries also successfully blocked passage of a measure that would have created whale sanctuaries in the South Pacific and the South Atlantic. Karen Mulvaney, a veteran of anti-whaling expeditions in Antarctica, attended the Berlin meeting as an independent observer. He says that the International Whaling Commission, or IWC, is nearly evenly divided between pro- and anti-whaling forces.
There are two sides that are very deeply entrenched. There is no apparent opportunity for dialogue. There is no trust on either side. Both sides have fought themselves to a stalemate, and it's very difficult to see where it goes from here. And so you basically have two blocks disagreeing on what the IWC's goal should be.
Well, what are the issues between them, and what holds them together?
What holds them together, if I can take that part first, is simply the fact that it is recognized and is established in international law as the forum, the only acceptable recognized international forum for dealing with issues related to whales in particular, and that to not be a part of that forum, particularly from the point of view of the pro-whalers, would therefore put them in very serious violation of international law, were they to try and conduct commercial whaling or any type of whaling outside of the forum. And, you know, what do they agree on? How do they work together? I mean, essentially they don't. What you have is one side comes in with an agenda, the anti-whaling side comes in with an agenda to pass resolutions to condemn, for example, the fact that Japan is using a scientific research clause in the whaling convention to continue commercial whaling, that Iceland is planning to do the same, whereas the other bloc is essentially seeking to get enough members that they can pass resolutions commending those same activities. There is at the heart an issue called the revised management scheme, and this is, ever since the Whaling Commission voted for a ban on whaling in 1986, it has theoretically been working towards this revised management scheme, which would allow for whaling to be conducted in a way that would not deplete whale populations. However, you have a situation where the conservation bloc doesn't really want this because they don't like the idea of any whaling. And in fact, the whaling bloc doesn't like it because this would severely restrict their whaling. So it's a little bit dysfunctional right now, frankly. And that was one of the definite senses that I came away with. The two sides have battered each other into a stalemate, and it's difficult to see where the Whaling Commission goes from here.
What are the greatest threats to whales, and where does commercial hunting fit in?
At its current level, commercial whaling is not by any means the largest threat facing whales. I would say there's a combination of issues. If you were to isolate any particular problem facing the marine ecosystem generally, it would have to be rampant overfishing that is taking place. I mean, that is devastating marine ecosystems, not just in terms of all the fish that are being removed, but also the habitat damage being done by bottom trawls, for example. If you factor in then additional issues whose impacts we still barely understand, for example, climate change and ozone depletion, also coastal habitat destruction, pollution, then you have these myriad of effects together, all possibly having severe impacts. And also, two of the interesting developments is whales appear to be perhaps in some considerable trouble from noise pollution and ship strikes, also particularly with small populations. For example, the right whales in the North Atlantic, the biggest single factor affecting them, because there's such a small population living in the coastal area, is being hit by ships.
In his new book, Whaling Season, Karen Mulvaney describes his decades-long fight to halt Japanese whaling vessels in Antarctica with the environmental group Greenpeace. He says that by 2001, the date of his last voyage, he began to doubt the wisdom of the protest on high seas that put his crew between the harpoons and the whales. He says Greenpeace had become technologically mismatched against a much stronger opponent.
They would make a point of speeding very, very far ahead of us. And in those rare occasions when we were able to catch up with them, they actually deployed giant water cannons from the factory ship to spray onto our inflatables and make life as miserable and uncomfortable as possible. And so, even though for periods we were actually quite successful in disrupting the whaling, once they decided that enough was enough and they needed to get on with the job, there was really very little we could do. And asking people to go down in such hostile environments and put themselves through such difficult and dangerous conditions for minimal gain was becoming very difficult for me to justify, and I think difficult for the organization to justify as well. And although I can no longer speak for Greenpeace because I don't work for them anymore, it's my sense that they're probably looking more now at strategies that work more within Japan in particular, for example, to help change public opinion from within and make it seem less of a case of people from outside trying to tell them what to do. And so that's the way to keep forward, basically. The foreign ministry in Japan is already very embarrassed by whaling. It's been embarrassed by it for a long time. It really would like it to go away.
Well, what are they gaining from it?
Commercial fishing is in danger of major collapse around the world. What they essentially want to do is to be able to maintain commercial fisheries in a short-term profitable but long-term unsustainable way without interference. One way that they're trying to do that is to cast whales as the scapegoats for declines in fisheries. They basically want to be able to maximize the short-term profit on all commercial fishing, and whaling is just sort of the thin end of the wedge there.
You say in your book, when you're talking about the conflict between whaling and non-whaling, at the end of the book, you say that ultimately at the heart of the conflict there is a fundamental cultural dichotomy. You say it's not a difference between West versus East, but rather in the use of the resource.
Right. You have one view that is espoused by the anti-whalers, which is just because a resource exists, it doesn't mean it should be exploited, and in this case it should be protected. And the other bloc saying, well, it was put there for us to use, so we've got to use it, and ideally we should do it sustainably, but you know, the key thing is to use it, and to be denied the opportunity to exploit it would be wrong.
Karen Mulvaney says that the demand for whale meat in Japan fell in 2001, and that 30% of the meat from the previous season remained unsold. He says the industry is subsidized in Japan to keep it afloat. He says whale watching, on the other hand, is turning a profit to the tune of $1.25 billion annually. I'm Roseanne Scherbel.